Wired Jesus Podcast, The Wired Wanderings of a Postmodern Pilgrim, Creative Commons Licensed.
Initiating startup sequence.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters.
Wired Jesus Podcast, Wired Wanderings of a Postmodern Pilgrim.
Scares me.
Well, yeah, but just because God doesn't answer your prayers doesn't mean he doesn't care about you.
Well, then why didn't he give me what I wanted?
Well, God can't just answer every prayer and suddenly give you everything you want. That takes all the living out of life.
What do you mean?
Hello. And welcome to the Wired Jesus Podcast, The Wired Wanderings of a Postmodern Pilgrim. I'm your host and fellow traveler, Tom Lieberg, and glad you've come along for our journey together. I always look forward to our annual week of church camp, something of a Lutheran tradition. Four of the last five congregations I served as pastor prized a week of church camp as an important part of a young person's faith development. Somewhere during their middle school years, parents would load them up into vans and buses and send them off into the remote areas of Ohio, Illinois, Indiana, and Wisconsin to go and meet Jesus in the woods, out there in the wilderness. Despite the occasional tears and bouts of homesickness, kids would discover that camp could be a magical place, where they would make new friends, where they would worship differently than they did at home, ask questions of college-age counselors who would give answers different than their parents or pastor. And the thing was, everyone back home was cool with that. Even more, the church people back home expected to hear about it. On one Sunday, usually at one service, the kids would lead the worship service with camp songs along with all the goofy motions, leading with guitars or music CDs, and showing pictures and telling stories of what camp meant to them, what they learned about Jesus and following him. Everyone would love it, and invariably, most would say it was a Sunday they always looked forward to, one of the best of the year. But then, it would happen.
I don't know, Kyle. Did you ask Mr. Hatt?
I don't want to ask Mr. Hatt. I'm asking you.
Oh, I think you should ask Mr. Hatt.
Mr. Hatt, may I please be excused from class?
Well, Kyle.
No! You hear me? You go to hell! You go to hell and you die!
Guess you'll have to take your seat, Kyle.
Damn it! Mr. Hatt yelled at you.
Some naive but insightful seventh grader would ask, if we all like this so much, the music, the clapping, the telling of stories of Jesus and faith, why don't we do it every Sunday? Now, the startling silence followed by the stern reproaches by adults and leaders is that, well, you just can't do it that way. Worship should be reverent and Lutheran. And typically they would make it pretty clear that this type of change for every Sunday just wasn't up for discussion. Worship is serious business led by adults and needed to be grounded in solid teaching and tradition, which apparently you didn't get at camp, but would be tolerated for one Sunday out of the year for the sake of the kids. It's puzzling. For decades, our tradition has lifted up sending our children to places of wilderness, of radical change and community, where faith and tradition are challenged and worked and reworked, and we have and continue to celebrate that. In fact, as a denomination, we're proud to point that over half of our Lutheran pastors sense their call to ministry first through a church camp experience. And yet the spiritual change that came with church camp and the lives of children and youth that was so prized was strangely segregated in congregational life to a summer experience away and a single recognition back in the community. After that, it was, don't ask those doubtful questions, don't ask for changing things because you like them. That's what you do at camp. That's not church. Not real church. I'm at church camp this week, and it's always been a time of change for me. And this year it's been a little disconcerting. Now, on one hand, it's been uplifting in many of the ways I'm used to and look forward to. We have excellent counselors here at Camp Moana who are doing great work with the kids and building faith communities in their cabins. The weather's been gorgeous, a little warm. And this year, as camp chaplain, I've had a great time leading the middle school kids in worship every evening. However, on the other hand, it has been somewhat discouraging, too. First, all of us pastor people who come and stay for the week, we love to chat about what's going on in our lives, in our congregations, and the denomination, since we come from so many different areas around Ohio and Michigan, and for too many right now, the news isn't good. On the camp front, we have three camps here in Ohio, and they're all in financial trouble because of low enrollments. Cost to send a kid to camp right now is over $400 per student for a week, and well, that isn't cheap, and it's downright expensive in this economy. So people wonder how and what change needs to be made in order to survive. And then for those of us who've been in camp, and, you know, I've been coming off and on for 16 of my 22 years, and there's folks here who have done it a whole lot longer. They're mourning the loss of the camp experience they grew up with when the numbers were two and three times of what we have this week. On the big church front, well, our denomination is something of a mirror of our government currently. Nearly 25 years ago, when three smaller church bodies merged to make our big denomination today, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, well, honestly, they overspent, they overstaffed, and overbuilt. We didn't need all the national resources or staff or seminaries in order to serve this new, larger body. But giving was good, so we did it anyway, thinking it compassionate or respectful of tradition, and so we doubled up on staff, we doubled up on seminaries, we spent more than we needed to. We sold two paid-off headquarters buildings and bought a new one and had a mortgage. Well, here we are now, and those of us who knew it couldn't be sustained back then, well, the economy and general malaise took its toll, and the bottom has since fallen out. So now we can't afford eight seminaries for training pastors, only graduating classes of 15 or 20. Our colleges, well, they're starting to go it alone because the denomination has stopped financial support. And strangely, we bet that people would stop moving to the Sun Belt and stay in traditionally cold and Lutheran Midwestern states like Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and the Dakotas. So we really didn't need to look at planting congregations in strange warm places like Alabama, Florida, or Arizona. Well, you look at the demographics, and where are the states in decline, and where are the states that are growing? Reality is now we have a lot of dying small congregations in demographically dying states. And Lutherans are virtually unknown throughout most of the growing Bible Belt and West. I don't think it's unfair to say we have become old, fat, and lazy. And we aren't ready for the life and the change that is now upon us in the 21st century. People out there want to see God. They want to experience Jesus. But they've made it pretty clear they don't want to do it on the terms of previous generations.
You listen to me. You say you don't want to tell me how to live my life. So what do you think you've been doing? You tell me what rights I've got or haven't got and what I owe to you for what you've done for me? Let me tell you something. I owe you nothing. If you carried that bag a million miles, you did what you were supposed to do. Because you brought me into this world. And from that day, you owed me everything you could ever do for me, like I will owe my son if I ever have another. But you don't own me. You can't tell me when or where I'm out of line, or try to get me to live my life according to your rules. You don't even know what I am, Dad. You don't know who I am. You don't know how I feel, what I think. And if I try to explain it the rest of your life, you will never understand. You are 30 years older than I am. You and your whole lousy generation believes the way it was for you is the way it's got to be. And not until your whole generation has lain down and died will the dead weight of you be off our backs. You understand? You've got to get off my back.
Which, of course, brings me to my own personal revelation. In the past couple of years, I have turned into something of a reflection of all this. 10 years ago, I was still among the younger pastors at camp. Now I'm the old guy among the pastors, the oldest for the first time. I used to DJ the weekly dance and have a playlist, and now I don't know most of the music. I mean, the kids like me, but they said it today, and they're right. I'm old, or at least older. I accept the compliment. I don't act like it. But there's no denying that my middle school kids who are here this year, I'm older than their parents. Now, as far as the fat and lazy part, well, my wife can speak to that, and I've started to work on it. Taken off a few pounds, but I don't climb the hills of Camp Moana with the same vigor or speed now at age 48 that I used to when I first started coming to camp. So, yeah, a little like the ELCA, I'm out of shape and a little out of tune. But more than that, I did something yesterday that I realized I hadn't done for far too long. I read a book. Not just part of a book, not just a chapter. I read a book. When you're a pastor in a large congregation, particularly in those times of transition like I've been when you're short of staff, and you have to do much more than the leadership and worship that a senior pastor does, you spend a lot of your time running from place to place, meeting needs, and the change that you used to thrive on becomes something of an unwelcome thing. The predictable routines of worship life and balancing all the competing complaints and crises take you to a place where you need a week at camp, a week in the wilderness, to shock you back into the reality of who God intends you to be. The book I read yesterday did exactly that. The Kindle version of Evolving in Monkey Town has been sitting quietly on my iPad for months, and despite getting to know the author, Rachel Held Evans, and turning my good friend and fellow Zondervan author John Armstrong onto her blog and book, I just couldn't quite find or make the time to read it. So yesterday, knowing I couldn't keep up with the kids and their wall climbing and creek hikes, I found a quiet spot on a lodge porch, read, and was inspired. If you look back into the Bible, you'll find that God is quite fond of the wilderness. That's where he courted the wayward people of Israel after rescuing them from Egypt, a people that still weren't sure they wanted this God who freed them and then called them to serve the world. The wilderness is where the persecuted prophets went to recharge, and where Jesus, in being tempted, claimed his called identity as the Son of God. I think God understands we need the wilderness. And Rachel, in this book, I think has articulated this better than anyone I've read in several years. 30 years old, she understands the yearning of my camp kids and their parents, as well as my own. In her own faith journey out of a decision-based salvation from hell, conservative evangelical understanding of Christianity, she's gone out into the wilderness and found the God of Israel in Jesus, who is not judge, but a suitor who courts his people with love when all else is stripped away from them. Love and stories of love in real life. That's what's really at the heart of the Old Testament and the ministry of Jesus, not judgment and this rescue mission from hell imposed by an angry and offended God. She understands that change has happened. And for those of us living in the promised land of affluent America, mainline denominations, and the paradigms of the 20th century, well, we can't go back. What we welcomed at camp has become the norm for a searching generation. And we as the church must change because, contrary to our pride, we weren't infallible in our thinking about God or being church. And it's not about guitars in church. It's about living like Jesus for a generation that we tried to raise on right thinking and right answers. Whether it's the boomer liberalism or the boomer evangelicalism, it's how we raised them. And as she put it, we raised the curiosity out of them, or at least attempted to, which prevented them from searching out and being discovered by God themselves out in the wilderness. The same's been true for me this week. While I am very, very, very glad to have a new full-time staff person coming on board to do family life and youth ministry, the change really is bigger than me passing off these activities to someone the same age as my oldest son. I realize there is a change in me that began yesterday, a need for wilderness change that Evolving in Monkey Town pointed me to and has excited me since yesterday. Yeah, my start against the Battle of the Flab needs to grow in earnest to take off this keg that used to be closer to a six-pack. Well, maybe a 12-pack. But more than that, there is a wilderness call that I hear that any listener of Wired Jesus these past 7 years has glimpsed and enjoyed and tuned into, and I think you'll be equally excited about in reading this book. If you have eyes to see and ears to hear, God is up to something new around us and wants us to be part of it, even if it means an old world is dying around us. God is showing us the power of resurrection and new life is actually right now. Like all the congregations who love sending their kids to camp and then restrict creative worship and questioning that comes out of, you know, one Sunday a year when it's tolerated, I think we've mistaken the things we say we love for the one we truly love. I mean, I guess after this week, I look at it this way. We love our denominational structure, be it the organization or the current demographics, but we love that more than we love the Lord of the church. We love our congregational buildings or the people who have been filling the pews for years more than the master who sends us out in the world to call and serve others as church. It's weird. It's like we love being married, being friends, because of the things we can do together, not because of who the person is. Life has always been about relationships, and that is particularly true with Gen Xers and Millennials. And if a relationship with a living God is central to being church, then what we call church today and its people have to change. And that's not bad news. That's normal when you grow. Too many of us, organizations and people, have stopped growing and think being unchanging is faithful and normal. But as Rachel explores in her book, you know, no one really believed that before. The church has always handed off faith to the next generation to explore and write and find its own way with God. The challenging part is that with this boomer generation, and yes, I'm going to go that direction one more time, but we really haven't done this for the younger generations. And now the change that we tried to avoid, thinking that we had the final say and discovery of who God is and what church is now upon us.
Yea, believe in me and ye shall find peace.
Yeah, we've heard that crap for about 2,000 years now. We want to hear something new. It's the year 2000, for Christ's sake.
Yeah!
Well, what do you want?
We want to see God!
Yeah, with our own eyes.
Yeah!
We followed blindly for thousands of years, and we think the least God can do is show up for New Year's Eve 1999.
Yeah!
Let me think about that for a minute.
Like Elvis, Jesus has left the building. And it's time for us to stop sitting, waiting for him to come back where we are comfortably seated. Jesus hasn't abandoned us. He's called us to get up and follow. So I guess, yeah, he's left our denominations because most, like ours, haven't followed yet. He's left many of our congregations since most of us haven't really set foot out of our buildings and still are waiting for people to come to us. He's left our bodies in a certain respect, since most of us have become flabby in faith and life, not really exercising the simplicity of walking and talking with Jesus alongside those who are out on the road all around us. So what does all this mean? I think it means, first off, you have got to read Evolving in Monkey Town. For me, it's one of the most influential things I've come across since the first Numa videos by Rob Bell. It's a hopeful book for the future of the church and the generation to come for those who are able to listen and to change. And for pastors and congregations, well, I think there too, it's time to change and give up the conceit that who and what we are right now is right for everyone else and for all time. God and the world are passing us by. And we need to follow where God leads, not stay where we are sitting. What we have been has to change, and that's a natural thing. And it means going back to the wilderness and getting to know God again on God's terms. And for me, well, it's time to get back into the wilderness, to take what I learned at camp this week, connect it back to my wilderness experiences of 6 years ago that fueled Wired Jesus and some of my best and most creative ministry. It's time to change. Time to lose some things in order to live healthy and hopeful again. Well, and thanks to God, Camp Moana, and Rachel Held Evans in Monkey Town, that's a good thing. So that's it for Wired Jesus Podcast number 63, and I have to say, it feels good. Now, you can find Evolving in Monkey Town on Amazon, and you can follow Rachel's blog. The links are on the Wired Jesus Podcast blog. Now, no promises as to what happens next, because in the big picture, yeah, still got a lot going on. But Wired Jesus still is as much about God messing with me as God messing with you. So let's just say, it's time for me to pick up the pace, get back out there, and see you out there on the road.
What if God was one of us? Just a slob like one of us. Blue, 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 blue. Yeah, blah, blee, blee, blee. Well done. Very good.
Dr. Evil, that was fantastic.
Thank you, number two. I wrote that. Yeah.